Are either of you expecting your clients or anyone else to participate in this hearing?
I am not, Your Honor.
Is sure?
Judge, I actually see that the agency is actually waiting to be let in. I am not expecting anyone else. Thank you.
So is it okay if we start 3 minutes early with you both?
Yes, Your Honor.
Okay.
Judge.
And let's see, there's the. So our final matter on the oral calendar is A22-1065 in the matter of the welfare of the children of GAH and ST. And it's consolidated with in the matter of the welfare of the children of ST and AD, which is A22-1066. You each will have 15 minutes for your principal arguments, and appellant will have 5 minutes rebuttal. These matters are being recorded and will be posted on our website. Please state your name for the record at the beginning of your argument and who you represent. And with that, attorney for appellant, are you ready to proceed?
I am, Your Honor.
You may then.
Thank you. Good morning, Judge Riley, Chief Judge Segal, and Judge Flory. May it please the court, I'm Angela Sansala, and I'm the attorney representing the appellant mother in this matter. Your Honor's due process and procedure and equity take center stage in this termination of parental rights appeal. I'd like to focus Your Honor's attention on three critical points. Of great importance is that the trial court's decision to deny mother the opportunity to testify at trial prejudiced mother and did not and failed to observe her due process rights.
Ms. Sansella, I agree that those are really important issues. I just have a question for you.
Yes.
At the end of your brief in part five, you talk about how the trial court erred in finding that appellant's child is neglected and in foster care. And we have a consolidated appeal here. The oldest two children were. There's a transfer legal custody to their dad. And so when you talk about child, are you talking about the third child? And if so, I'm wondering what remedy you're seeking, if you understand my question.
I do understand your question. I'm talking in this case, I'm talking about yes, Your Honor, child, I believe it's child number three.
Right.
And so the remedy that I'm seeking regarding that particular issue is the same remedy that I'm seeking for all issues, and that would be that the court would overturn the trial court's decision and remand this matter back to the trial court for further testimony of particularly of the mother.
Okay, so the remedy, what your client wants would be to have all children's custody returned to her. Is that what you're saying?
Yes, that's correct, Your Honor.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
And I'm sorry to interrupt the beginning flow of your argument.
That's okay. Hopefully I answered the question sufficiently. Just continuing on, Your Honors, of great importance is the trial court's decision to essentially deny mother the opportunity to testify at trial. Also, that the trial court barred mother's attorney from cross-examining the guardian ad litem. And finally, of the third point that I would like to focus on today is that mother substantially complied with her case plan, yet the agency chose to go forward with the termination of parental rights, and the court erred in determining that mother failed to comply with her case plan. Regarding the first issue, the trial court constructively barred mother's testimony by failing to ensure that her due process rights were protected. And specifically, the trial court determined that mother failed to appear, yet the record does not support that mother was properly notified of the continued trial date. The court in reviewing, your honors, in reviewing the documents, would see and hopefully recall that this was a very confusing trial that spanned over 2.5 months. And ultimately, there were at least eight different trial dates that were set. And I believe 5 dates where trial testimony was actually taken. There were a lot of continuances and there was a lot of confusion. It's noteworthy that Mother appeared and present at all previous court trial dates in this matter, other than the June 1st hearing date, at which the trial court then decided to proceed without her testimony and not allow her to testify. I think in looking at equity, the trial court's burden, among other things, is that it may only terminate parental rights of a parent for grave and weighty reasons. And that's in the welfare of MDO 462 Northwest 2nd 375. It seems prudent then that in reviewing grave and weighty reasons, that the court would want to hear all of the testimony, all of the relevant testimony, which certainly seems that it would include the mother's testimony. In this case, Mother was wanting to testify. Mother had appeared at every hearing, and Mother was confused about the date of the June 1st hearing. And Mother asserted that she was not notified of that date and did not know of that date. The trial court states in its order that there were numerous ways that Mother could have reached out to try to find the next court date, that she could have proactively called court administration with a caseworker. However, the rules don't require Mother to reach out to all possible avenues to find the court date. The rules require that the court notify Mother of the next court date. And
but Ms. Sonsala, the rules also say that service is accomplished upon service on her attorney. And it doesn't seem that there's any dispute that her attorney was served with the June 1st court date. She was present in court when the parties agreed on that date, and she was served general delivery at an address she gave the court. Whether she was confused or not, it seems as though there were 3 different avenues of information to her to advise her of that date, and that under the rules, she was validly and legally served with that notice. So the judge didn't accept her explanation that she was confused under those circumstances. And that seems to be a discretionary decision on whether to continue the trial or not.
Your Honor, I agree and concede that she was present at the hearing when the June 1st date was ultimately decided. However, I would just add that there was a lengthy discussion on the record that particular day where several dates were discussed. And for anybody who isn't familiar with the court system and isn't an attorney or isn't a court personnel staff, it may have been confusing to her. And I think it's realistic to think that she didn't understand by the end of this hearing when the next court date was going to be. There were literally, I think, 4 or 5 different court dates put out, multiple people talking between attorneys and the judge, and court staff. So I would just argue to the court that it seems reasonable that my client would not have understood. And to that point,
but the trial court didn't accept that. So how is that a clear abuse of discretion? Because that's really the standard for us.
Yes, Your Honor. Thank you. As far as an abuse of discretion, sorry, I'm just going to flip. Thank you. The matter of the welfare of HGB, which is 306 Northwest 2nd 821, specifically says that the amount of due process varies based on the circumstances of the matter and involves a balance of the interests involved in the specific case under consideration. I'm asking this court to review the trial court's discretion in implementing Rule 18.02 and proceeding by default. While the court had
that the court proceeded by default. And the court went at some length in the order to say, I didn't proceed by default because her attorney was there and we had evidence taken, testimony taken.
And yes, Your Honor, and the record is very contradictory on whether or not default, but the court proceeded by default. There is places in the record where it says that where the in the judge's order himself or itself, where the trial court says that the matter proceeded by default and then goes on to say, no, this wasn't default. And I think ultimately, whether to some degree, I think it's somewhat a matter of semantics, whether it was considered default or whether it was considered proceeding without testimony from the mother, because ultimately the issue that matters is whether or not mother had an opportunity to be heard. And so, I understand that.
I ask you another question? When yes. I read your brief, you make the crux of it, as I read it, is that it centers around these due process concerns with how the trial was conducted and yes. what flowed out of that. And then you also say that some of the legal conclusions about the basis for the involuntary termination and transfer, there was insufficient evidence. But you're not saying that there are factual findings that are clearly erroneous. Is that right? You're saying the conclusions drawn are wrong, but I didn't see you saying that the factual findings were clearly erroneous or not supported by the record. Am I reading your brief right?
Your Honor, I think you're reading the brief right. However, I would just point out that I believe in each of the subsections where I make the legal argument, there are areas where I do point out in the brief findings by the court that were, I believe, clearly erroneous. And so I think, while I didn't make that as an overall argument, it is included in the argument of each of the main points that were okay, each of
so
the main
I'm
arguments.
I'm looking at page 26 and pages 26 and 27 of the judge's order, and in particular findings 136 through 144. And this is the judge talking about the trial home visit, and mother really wanted father to be able to babysit, but was told that if father was present, the department or county, whatever you want to call them, agency would seek to end the trial home visit. And then later, mother says, and I'm looking at 141, stated father was her life partner and that it's unfair to require her to leave him. And then at 144 on August 24th, when she called the Pope County Human Services and said she's out of medication, wanted to smoke marijuana, could not care for the children anymore, and stated that she wanted to live with the man she loved, father. Those findings are all supported in the record.
I would say, Your Honor, that it's correct that I did not challenge those particular findings. I would also, however, argue to the court that those very findings are some of the things that mother was prepared to testify about, and that mother was hoping and intending to testify about, which goes back to the due process issue, and ultimately really the issue of equity. Again, Rule 18.01 or and any rule that the judge proceeded under in determining that mother should not be allowed to testify was a may rule. There was no rule that said that the judge shall proceed without mother's testimony. And in understanding that the judge has discretion, it's also this court's authority to review that discretion. And ultimately, in this case, mother argues that discretion was clearly erroneous because it had a significant impact on the information that the court considered when it took this matter under advisement. There were, for example, those statements that were the findings that Your Honor Judge Briley just referenced that were made. And while I understand why the trial court made those findings based on the record that was in front of it, those findings and other findings were the exact things that Mother had intended to testify about that may have had a significant impact on the judge's ultimate findings. The judge, in hearing additional testimony from Mother, I think would have had very well could have had a different decision regarding the findings that he made. And I think ultimately to say that the county, the agency, or the child would have been prejudiced by allowing Mother to testify seems like a reach, because in that particular case, Mother stated that she, or excuse me, attorney for Mother stated that Mother could be there at 1 o'clock that day within a matter of mere hours. So this wasn't a situation where anyone was asking that this, that there be some sort of indefinite extension, or even Mother's attorney was not asking that there be, that this even be reset to another day, just that Mother be given at that point a couple of hours to get there so that her testimony could be heard. Again, considering that she had been present at every hearing up to and prior to that particular day. I see my time has expired.
Thank you. You will have 5 minutes for rebuttal.
Thank you.
Attorney for respondent.
Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the court. Ms. Sinsala, I am Kathleen Scher. I am the attorney for the respondent, the Department of Human Services. And I guess I'll start with 22 months. 22 months is the time that the children in this matter had been out of home placement at the time that we finally concluded trial in this matter. I do not disagree with Ms. Sinsala that there were significant irregularities in these proceedings, but I would request the court in reviewing the record find that the trial court continuously made good cause findings, which I understand is not an appropriate continuance, but made good cause findings in order to extend the timelines and allow the parents to essentially put on their case and give them adequate time to prepare for trial. Now this trial.
I don't understand how she phones in on the last day of trial. He says it's not an appearance and he can't take telephone testimony. I just don't understand that.
Well, Judge, I'll tell you that I think that over the course of the last few years, it has become more and more accepted for and a necessity at some point for us to have allowed testimony over video and over telephone. That being said, our judges, at least, have been very firm in that in matters this important, in-person testimony is necessary. They have treated termination of parental.
But if it's an important matter, why? I mean, was her attorney allowed to cross-examine even?
No, Judge, he was not.
That's what I thought. So, I mean, I have to tell you, I'm very troubled by what happened here, by not allowing Mom to testify by phone and by not even allowing her attorney was there. Mom was listening on phone, by not even allowing her attorney to cross-examine the witnesses.
And Judge, I'll tell you that the only witness that appeared following the court indicating that they were not going to allow Mother to testify by phone was the guardian ad litem. I don't disagree with the court that I do not believe that that was the appropriate route to take. I believe that the attorney should have been entitled to cross-examine the guardian ad litem. And quite frankly, if I had known that that's how the court was going to proceed, I would not have asked questions. So I do agree that the court did not act appropriately in that aspect. I do not believe it's to the extent that the court should overturn the trial court's findings and order a new trial. As the court can see from the guardian ad litem's testimony, it was very limited. The court did take into consideration the guardian ad litem's reports from all prior hearings, as well as the findings that the court had made at those hearings, that do include, at times, mother's opposition to what the guardian ad litem was saying. I would also point out that in this case, it is my understanding from how the court ruled that they were fed up with the antics that the parents were doing in order to continue this matter. The court reviews the record when we were originally supposed to start. We were originally supposed to start back in September with father. Subsequently, okay. Mother.
Can I yes. redirect you for a minute? So, going back to the actual decision to terminate mom's parental rights, it seems like a fair amount of it. Like she had at least partially complied with parts, fully complied with other parts of the plan. But she was homeless. I mean, is that, I mean, could we just conclude, look, she was poor and she was homeless. That's why she lost her kids. What's wrong with that conclusion?
Well, a number of things, Judge. And I think a lot of this does come down to compliance or lack thereof with the agency. As you can see from the trial court's findings and from the testimony of both the agency, all of the agency workers, as well as the guardian ad litem, there was another case that was going on at this time. Mother and father were very good about trying to triangulate services and redirect what they were not doing and blaming it on others. Throughout the case, the agency was blamed for mother's inability to comply with things, inability to get transportation. The agency offered her transportation and she wouldn't accept that because they were talking about politics or they were talking about religion. Got her a new driver and she wouldn't accept that because father wasn't able to come with her. It was excuse after excuse. And so while she did comply with some aspects of the case plan, there were many that she did not comply with. I think a bigger issue in this case was the fact that we did start a trial home visit based on mother's somewhat compliance with the case, and she was not able to hold it together for even that short period of time that the trial home visit was in place. Mother essentially had a mental health crisis, said she was going to bang her head against the wall. We had to remove the kids. She couldn't handle it. When the social worker came, the house was a mess. The kids were all dirty. They were noted that the youngest child had feces essentially plastered to their bottom, and it had indicated that the diaper had not been changed in quite some time. And so that is the bigger, I think, factor in this case. Housing and inability to maintain that is definitely an issue. But mother's overall lack of functional stability was really the biggest issue in this case, closely followed by her inability to leave father, her inability to separate herself from father. I do want to just go back just quickly on one thing, in that when the trial home visit was terminated, mother objected to that, but she did not have her required evidentiary hearing on that. Instead, she deferred and said she would do it at trial. At any point between this trial home visit was terminated in September and when we concluded the trial, she could have gone back. She could have requested an evidentiary hearing. She could have said, trial's going on too long. I want to do this now. She never once did. This would have been mother's opportunity to provide the court with her side of what happened. She didn't do that. At the point that we got to the trial and when mother did not show up, I think it's. I just want to refer the court back to the transcript from that hearing that was held setting the June 1st date. The very second to last line of that transcript is mother's attorney saying, in-person hearing June 1st, correct? And the judge saying, yes, in-person hearing. It was made very clear throughout that transcript that we would be having a hearing on June 1st. And as this court has pointed out, mother was served in a variety of different ways. And through mother's own lack of having an appropriate address, mother's own lack of remaining in contact with her attorney, she didn't show up on June 1st. I want to go back. The court has indicated a couple of different times with regard to the findings in this case. The court has a 78-page order. 70 pages of that is findings that the court made. The court made very careful findings in this case, and that the agency had petitioned on several grounds to terminate both mother and father's rights. The court did not grant all of the allegations against the parents, but made very specific and careful findings with regard to which allegations he believed were supported and the agency had proved, and which they had not. And I think that that does go to show just how careful the court was, how careful it was in its determination that the mother and father had not complied in certain aspects to the point where termination was in the best interest of all three of these children. Termination was in the best interest of the youngest child, and involuntary transfer was appropriate for the two older children. And I think that also goes back to Ms. Ansala's reference with regard to the case regarding AGB, and that the amount of due process in a case depends on each case. This court made very careful findings. It reviewed this decision very carefully. It weighed mother's right to continue this case once again against the fact that this case had been going on over and over. The number of continuances we had, only one time was due to some reason other than mother or father. And that was the judge in the case being tested positive for COVID. Every other time was either father not being ready or mother not being prepared or requesting a continuance. One of those times was due to father having what I'll call as a medical emergency the day of trial. And the judge took that into consideration and again continued. So I think that at the point that we got to the June 1st date, the judge was done. Unless the court has any other questions for me, I know I have 5 minutes left, but I don't have any other information to present to the court.
Judges Siegel or Flory, any questions? Seeing none, thank you.
Thank you.
Ms. Ansala, you'll have 5 minutes of rebuttal.
Excuse me, thank you. I would just like to address first Ms. Scher's statement about the court being fed up with the antics of the parents, or that ultimately the court was fed up by June 1st. And I think that that's a fair assessment. I think that ultimately the court and the record supports that the court was just fed up with this case by June 1st. And that's noteworthy, and it's important because it goes to whether...
I think it would be implied. I don't think there's a finding that I'm fed up. How do you think we get there? Based on the record.
Based on the record, Your Honor, I think we get there based on the fact that the court, based on the record from the trial transcript from June 1st, that mother was available, that mother did in fact call in, that mother and her attorney both indicated that she was wanting to testify, that there was no finding that there would be any prejudice or any reason not to allow mother to testify. And also that mother's attorney, this matter was scheduled for trial for the entire day on June 1st and for the entire day on June 2nd as well. And mother's attorney indicated that she could be there within a matter of a couple of hours on the 1st and still have half of the day. So the June 1st beginning at 1 o'clock. And so I think we get there by virtue of the fact that mother's attorney gave a reasonable solution to the court to remedy mother not being present. And again, looking at due process being individualized based on the circumstances of each case. It seems in that case where there was no history whatsoever of mother failing to appear at not only the court trial, but even previous hearings during other cases, or excuse me, the underlying CHIPS case. There was no reason to think that this was a situation where mother just forgot or wasn't, that mother had made a choice not to come, that mother had any reason. In fact, mother in her affidavit in the motion to reconsider did state that she had not heard from her attorney regarding the court date, and that she had been in contact with that attorney or attempted contact. that she had called his office, that particular weekend was Memorial Day weekend. So that Monday, both the court administration and her attorney's office were closed. That this wasn't a situation where she just wasn't making attempts to find out when the hearing was. Given all of that, it seems that the trial court's decision on June 1st to not allow any grace, to not make reasonable accommodations to allow the trial to proceed with testimony of mother was clearly erroneous and had a significant impact, I think, on this ultimately the outcome of this case. And in fact, Assistant County Attorney Scher concedes that there were significant irregularities throughout this case. And that ultimately the testimony was limited. And again, not just the testimony of my client, but also the testimony through cross-examination of the guardian ad litem. And I think that that's an important point as well. I understand that the trial transcript shows relatively concise and short testimony by the guardian ad litem. But I think what's important is that the record also shows that there were multiple exhibits that were ultimately accepted into evidence by the court that were guardian ad litem reports and other reports that mentioned the guardian ad litem. And so the testimony, the cross-examination of guardian ad litem would not have, in my opinion, would not have been limited only to what she testified directly at court, but also it would have been open to the exhibits that were authored by her, the exhibits that were in fact the guardian ad litem reports. And that makes a big difference because there were several things that I think mother's trial attorney would have had the opportunity to ask the guardian ad litem on cross-examination that he was essentially precluded from doing. And again, to the detriment of mother, to the point that I believe it prejudiced her opportunity for a fair trial. I see that I'm out of time. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Your briefing was helpful, and as were the oral arguments, and we'll have our decision out within the statutory timeframe. And that concludes our oral calendar. We will recess to our non-oral calendar. Thank you very much. Thank you, Your Honor.